Welcome, folks, to Chew the Fat with Craig Hartman. This is the food conversation podcast that cuts through the fat and gets to the meat of what it takes to be a chef, what it takes to be a hardcore food person. And this is the podcast where hopefully you will be totally inspired if you're a foodie, and hopefully even a little appalled. And tonight we are here with Chef Harrison Keevil of Brookville Restaurant out of Charlottesville, Virginia. And Harrison, compared to some of the other chefs that we've been interviewing, has taken the road less traveled, and a graduate of University of Virginia. And we'll ask him a little bit later what he graduated in, but I think it was one of these esoteric studies. And went to England to work in the financial realm, and ended up realizing that he just loved food so much that he had to enroll in the French Culinary Institute in New York City, and he's been around the country. He's been out to, I believe, San Francisco. And was that the town, Harrison? Yeah, San Francisco. And worked in some beautiful places out there, which we'll hear about later, and back to Charlottesville, where he went to school. And, you know, so many people come back to Charlottesville because it's so beautiful. And so tonight we have Harrison Keevil. Harrison, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. I got to tell you, I think you have a cool name, Harrison.
Thank you.
Harrison Keevil. Did you make that name up, or was that your real name?
It's my real name. Yep.
I was wondering that, because Craig Hartman as a chef, I never thought that was like the coolest name, and I was trying to think of names, to have. But Harrison Keevil, I think, people can take that seriously.
I hope so.
As a chef. Harrison, by the way, I think is one of the, I'll call these guys the young guns of Charlottesville, Virginia. There's some fantastic restaurants here. Harrison owns his own restaurant, Brookville. And that's kind of, it's kind of the American dream. Tell us a little bit about Brookville Restaurant.
Well, Brookville is kind of a culmination of the past 5 years. I went to culinary school with the dream of opening my own place. And then upon graduating culinary school, I gave myself the timeline of 5 years to open my own place. So between graduation and opening, I wanted to learn as much as I could about every aspect of the industry as I could, to then come home and open my own place. And through my journeys and education, Brookville has become a seasonal local restaurant inspired by where I've been, what I've seen, who I've met, what I've eaten. Just kind of evolves every day, because sometimes my taste will be one thing one day and another next.
How does it feel to, live the American dream? We have a lot of people out there. I'm hoping a lot of young chefs listening, also foodies, and, a lot of chefs have said to me, who works for some beautiful places, that their dream is to have a restaurant. And some of them have been in the business, three or four times longer than you. And now you have, you're here with your own restaurant. How's it feel? What's it feel like?
Every day is the most amazing day of my life. I mean, I'm getting to do what I love every single day. I mean, I really can't ask for anything more. I get to come in, play with knives, play with fire, play with big slabs of meat, and I mean,
okay, don't talk dirty here, Harrison. this is a family show. No, I'm just kidding. Let me ask you real quick. I said a few things about you. You went to University of Virginia. You've traveled around. You've been in Europe. You've seen some fantastic restaurants over there. You did a stage at the Fat Duck with Heston Blumenthal, the second best chef in the world to me. And no, I'm just kidding. I actually said that once to somebody and they just laughed, and I got very dejected. But, you've been around, and now you're back here. But what we don't know is, you know, like, where did this all start for you? Did it start before you got to UVA? Did you ever have this in your mind as a child? Is there something that defines you from the time you were young until right now that gave you a clue?
Well, looking back on it now, it seems so much clearer than when it was when I was living it. But ever since I was little, food's always been a part of our lives. Thanksgiving, my mom would cook us 4 meals a week. We'd sit around. And then I think when I turned 12, I became in charge of the grill for all cookouts because my dad, being the true Brit, knows how to cook till done and then cook some more. Mm. So I was kind of forced. It forced my hand onto the grill. And then when I went to college, I started really watching more Food Network, reading cookbooks, and finally had my own kitchen, living in by myself with my roommates, and started cooking for them, and just realized something I like to do. But at that point, it was just a hobby, a budding passion. Then when I moved to London, it all clicked. I ate at a restaurant called what was then called Petrus, but is now called Marcus Waring at the Barclay.
Right.
And it was the perfect dining experience for me. First, I was there with my parents who were celebrating their anniversary. So that was special.
Yeah.
But it was just a lot of firsts for me. It was my first fine dining experience. It was the first time I tasted caviar. We got to go into the kitchen, got to meet the chef. And it was then I realized this is something I might really be interested in. But I didn't have the courage at that point to tell my parents it's what I wanted to do.
Sure.
Then I came back after I lived there the first time, and my parents hit me with that, what do you want to do with your life question, kind of out of the blue. I said, well, I really want to open a restaurant. I said, well, you've got to go to school. So with their blessing, I started looking at schools and was shown the French Culinary Institute by one of my family members who has a restaurant on Long Island, and fell in love with the place.
Yeah.
Got in and really haven't looked back since.
Awesome. So nothing in your childhood ever told you this. This happened like in the kind of the prime of your college years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you lived in Charlottesville, when you were a student at UVA, I mean, very cultural. It's a great school. You have all kinds of things to do. Were there places you went to eat that you liked the most?
It's weird. My palate didn't really become refined enough until I really moved away from college. I was eating the normal college stuff, Gus Burgers, Bodo's, all great food.
Sure.
But not the refined stuff that I've become accustomed to.
So you weren't even a foodie then?
Not particularly.
You were a pretty studious guy at that point, right?
I think what I really enjoyed cooking for my friends and seeing the looks on their faces when they tried something good.
Yeah.
That was what brought me the most joy, was to bring my friends joy, just feeding them.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool because, you know, we've talked to a few people and, heard how they came upon this particular thing, and it's nice to see the various ways that people come about it, and the fact that you found this thing after college, and but you're that passionate about it. I read a few things online about Brookville. One blogger said, you upped the ante in Charlottesville. Somebody said it was possibly a perfect meal, and so here you are. Maybe you don't feel like at one point you were born to do this, but let me ask you, do you feel like being a chef is something that you're born to do, or something that really anybody who wants to do it can pick it up and succeed at it?
I don't think it's necessarily something that someone could just kind of pick up. You've got to have it in your bones. You've got to feel it. You've got to kind of love food more than just seeing it as fuel. You have to kind of, think of it sexually and think of it in all facets
what I'm
of
talking about right
of
there.
Like of just I don't know, food to me is, I mean, it makes people happy, it makes people go crazy and go make love, it makes people angry, it makes people, it just, it's awesome.
Yeah. Well, then let me ask you this. We've talked about this before. You know, I've been around a lot of cooks over the years, and possibly some people who are unbelievable technicians who could make pretty much everything on the face of the planet, but I felt like they didn't have it in their soul. And you know, we're sitting here with you now. You have your own restaurant. It's been successful. You've been getting some really great reviews. And, you know, it's not, you're not 30 years in. You're not 40 years in. And so it could be some proof that it has to come from your soul. How do you feel? Do you feel like you have to be the greatest technician in the world to be the greatest chef?
No, not at all. I think you need to be a good cook to be come even on your way to becoming a great chef. I'm so far away from becoming anything great, because, to be honest, I'm only 5 years in to being a professional chef, and I learn something new every day. But you've definitely got to feel it deep down. You've got to be willing to sacrifice the hours. You're not going to get to party with your friends. You're not going to get to go out at night. You're going to have to sacrifice your body.
Yeah.
You get your knees hurt, you get burns, you get everything.
Your knees hurt already, Harrison?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. You're in trouble, buddy.
Yeah. but that's the thing. It's worth
it.
It's a labor of love. If I didn't have cooking, I don't know what the hell I'd be doing.
That's quite a statement. So here you are. You're talking with me. We're in the studio here with Chew the Fat. And you say you're so far from being a great chef. What do you think? What defines a chef to you? Is that, what kind of a term is that?
A chef is a leader, I think. It's someone who can take a group of people, come up with a vision, and lead those people to that vision. You've got to surround yourself with the right people.
Mm-hmm.
So I was told by a chef, if you're yelling at your employees, they're the wrong employee.
Mm-hmm.
But a chef is someone who can take a group of people and make them believe in what he is doing or she is doing. And hopefully that team can then work to that goal together, and then the sky's the limit. I mean, if you just keep working hard every day, something's going to pay off.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. Now, let me ask you real quick. You went to the French Culinary Institute. Describe that experience for me. You know, I've been to the Culinary Institute of America years ago, and I know how I felt there. But you're the first person that I've really talked to who's gone to the French Culinary Institute. And I've heard really good things about it. But just describe, like, what was that experience like for you?
Oh, it was probably one of the best experiences of my life. Not only was I getting to live in one of the coolest cities, if not the best food city, in New York, but I was surrounded by some of the greatest talent in the world. I mean, any school that can boast Jacques Pepin as their dean is... Yeah. Going to be pretty cool. I mean, they've got Alain Sayac, and it's just the amount of knowledge that they had there and their willingness to impart that on every student that goes through those doors was remarkable. It gave me a great foundation in classical French cooking, something that I think every chef should know the basics of French cooking.
Sure.
Just because from that you can go so many places. And it gave me discipline in the kitchen. It taught me how to work in a restaurant. It gave me everything I needed to go out into the restaurant industry and be successful. It was it was then my duty to not mess it up.
Sure.
They gave me all this knowledge. Now it's my turn to repay them by going out, doing the best that I can, and praising them, because I wouldn't be here where I am without them.
So you feel responsible as a young culinarian to show well for the French Culinary Institute and your chefs that you had there?
Oh, yeah.
So what do you think? What was the do you have one experience there that you can remember that really kind of influenced you in any way, like one thing or a couple things that were...
Well, I had a chef. We called him Chef Nick. And he was, I can't remember where he was from, but every time someone would get behind, he would just be like, you're in the weeds, I need a weed vacker. And it's just that instilled in me, it's like, all right, he's saying you're in the weeds, now you got to pull yourself out.
Right.
What are you going to do to get yourself out? You got to stop, look, take account of what's going on, and then prioritize it. And then work your butt off to get yourself out.
Right.
And it's just, I don't know. You'd watch people crash and burn, and you'd watch people succeed. Mm-hmm. But you would learn from both. I mean, I crashed and burned so much that I probably learned more that way than I would have being successful. Because
sure.
You learn more from your mistakes.
True enough. If you... believe that you actually made a mistake. I've had a few people who didn't think they made mistakes, but I remember one of my chefs, first chefs, told me, they said, Craig, if you'll learn from your mistakes, you will undoubtedly be one of the greatest chefs that ever walked on the face of the earth. And you know why they said that? Because I made so many mistakes that I had to be good if I learned from those. So I appreciate hearing that in you. Do you think you possess any, like a special attribute inside, something in kind of inherent inside you that helps propel you and succeed as a chef?
I think it's my sense of humility. I'm willing to have someone say, that's not good. I'll sit there and have them criticize me, but then I'm going to be like, okay, now what can I do to make it better?
Mm-hmm.
Teach me. If I messed up, teach me, please. Because in order to give everyone what they want, I need to learn what the people want. And I need to put my ego aside. And if someone wants their steak well done, I can bitch and moan as much as I want, but I'm going to do it. And you have to. We're in the service industry. We are here to give people what they want. They are paying us for an experience. So it's our duty to just put your ego aside and give them the best experience that they can have.
Yeah, true. Now, where do you think you learned that? Where did that come from in you, your humility?
Oh, my family.
Mm-hmm.
They never allowed me or my brother to get a big fat head.
I mean, yeah.
You have to respect who you are, where you're from, and that no one is better than you. No one is worse than you. Everyone's on the same plane. And once you know that, you just work to make everyone else around you better in some way.
True enough. And, you know, you look at some chefs out there who, sometimes get the, how do I put it? They get the reputation that they might think they're better than other people or better than other chefs, and that what they do is... above everyone else. You do good food. Do you ever feel that way in your own heart? Do you ever feel like, well, you know, I'm better than, my restaurant is better than restaurant AZ over here?
Of course. I mean, every chef is going to think my food is the best. But if you're not, you've got to figure out what the hell you're doing wrong.
Right.
Because someone's better than you. I mean, the weird thing about being a chef is I believe that we are always trying to achieve a perfection that is unattainable. We're trying to reach for the carrot at the end of the stick, but we'll just never grab it. But every day, if we push forward to even come close to that, it's a good day.
Sure. Now, do you ever play sports?
Yes.
As a child? And because, you know, as you're talking and I'm gleaning, you know, there's a lot of, you seem to have a lot of positivity towards the way you're talking, and but it also seems to equate a little bit to, you know, coaching and sports, goal oriented, but at the same time, always willing to change if things aren't going well. Do you feel like you've had any coaches or anybody like that in your life that influenced you on, or was it a parent that you know, taught you to aim high like that?
I mean, I think one thing that's been constant in my life is people telling me you can't be afraid to fail. If you're afraid to fail, then you won't succeed, because everyone falls flat on their face at some point. Mm-hmm. It's what you do after that. You got to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and keep trying. Learn from what you did and keep trying, because it's never as bad as it seems.
Sure. Now, in your restaurant at Brookfield, so you're about three quarters of a year in, maybe. Are there some experiences you've had there that you've had to do that, brush yourself off and move forward? Is there anything? Or has it been like all smooth sailing?
Oh, hell no, it hasn't been smooth sailing. And if it was, I would be so worried because, I mean, I don't even like getting the praise that we're getting, to be honest, this soon. Mm-hmm. We've only been open for 7 months. And I feel like we have so much more potential in us,
mm-hmm.
That we can do so much more, do so much better, that I like a night where service doesn't go perfect. For example, there was the last 2 weeks ago on a Saturday, our printer went down in the kitchen and they were all getting rerouted to another printer that was in the next room.
Mm-hmm.
And my expediter had to leave the line for most of the night because the front of the house, we just got slammed. We'd never been so slammed since we'd been open. And tickets were backing up. We didn't know what was getting fired. But through all that, my guys on the line, who performed remarkably well, and myself, we just got through it. We worked our butts off, and we believe that most everyone had a good experience that night out front.
Sure.
It's so weird when you're in the back, and it's so chaotic, and then you walk out front, and it's calm.
Right.
It's really, really crazy. You think the sky is falling. The sky is falling in the back. You think you're behind. You think you're never gonna get through it. Then you go out front. And you look at the people's faces and you see smiles. And you're like, okay, this isn't that bad. This isn't that bad.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. How do you feel about waiters?
Waiters, I think they are an integral part of a restaurant. There is no front of house, back of house divide in my restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
We all work as a team. We all fail as a team, succeed as a team. It's the only way to do it. I'm so fed up with restaurants that the back of house hate the front of house and the front of house resent the back of house. There's no room for that in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to succeed, you all have to do it together. And yeah, I might get pissed at a waiter here and then for doing something stupid, but I'll get pissed at my back of house guys. I mean, everyone needs to do their job to the best of their ability, and we need to work together to a common goal to make everyone who leaves our restaurant happy.
Mm-hmm. So now do you find that some of your cooks, when they first start working for you, think of put it this way. Do you think that some of your people just cook to put a plate up, or do they cook knowing that there's people in that dining room that are paying customers?
I think when it started out, they were just kind of putting up food, not realizing what was going on. But working together for as long as we have thus far, I've got two other guys in the kitchen with me, Dylan and Noah, and they are amazing. Mm-hmm. They have bought into what Brookfield is, and they understand that our job is to make these people happy. We have to put out the best quality food that we can using the best quality ingredients we can source and hope for the best.
Well, let me ask you, since you said that, describe Brookville.
Well, the philosophy of Brookville is we try to source upwards of 85 to 90% of what we cook from within 100 miles of Charlottesville.
Yeah.
And from then there, we will go regional. And then I will pull in things like foie gras because I absolutely love foie gras and sure. I want to cook it. And some cheeses and some citrus. But for the most part, I like being able to know that my stuff wasn't picked, I don't know, months ago.
Sure.
I like my lettuce. I like to know that my lettuce was literally cut that morning and it's in my fridge. Or the eggs that I have were laid 2 days prior.
Mm-hmm.
It's just we have such an abundance of beautiful produce, meat, everything within 100 miles. It would just be stupid not to use it. And it actually infuriates me when I see things like tomatoes on menus in restaurants in the dead of winter.
Sure.
It really infuriates me. And it causes customers to want that stuff in the winter, which is what they shouldn't want. They should want meat and potatoes in the winter, and they should want clean vegetables in the summer and spring. And it's I think, Brookville's responsibility to, as well as other chefs such as Tucker Yoder of Clifton,
right.
who's doing a great job, just got hired there. His food's phenomenal. And he focuses on local sourcing as well. And it's our responsibility to show these people that you've got great stuff in your backyard, and it's not that hard to find it, and it's not that much more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well get it, because if it worked for Thomas Jefferson, it can work for us.
Yeah, sure. Sure. It's pretty cool to be in the area where Thomas Jefferson lived, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, I've had a couple nice experiences picking vegetables up there myself, and I remember asking the gardener up there if she ever got used to being up here, and she said absolutely not. What do you think of that influence, and do you feel like you are inspired by that in this area?
I'm definitely inspired by it, and I feel a responsibility to pass on the knowledge that Thomas Jefferson wrote down and that I've researched, and I think it's important that we live our life similar in the respect of the food we eat,
mm-hmm.
The way we treat the land, the way we treat each other, just simple philosophies that
sure.
I think are more poignant today than ever because of all the issues with the economy. And I think we're kind of regressing back to a bartering society where help your neighbor.
Sure.
Help if they've got tomatoes and you've got lettuce, trade. Make yourself a BLT sandwich.
I can't wait till summer rolls around for that, I'll tell you.
I can't wait.
Well, let me ask you this. You talked about research. This is something I haven't asked people yet, but you're a studious guy and an ex-scholar. How much research goes into what you do?
Depends on the dish. Some dishes, I'll walk in, look at what I've got, and be like, okay, I can do this, I can do that, I can do this. But then I'll get ingredients that I've never, ever seen before, and I'll bring them in just because I've never seen them. And I'll go to my cookbooks, and I'll see, okay, what goes well with this? What can I cook it? How can I cook it? And then
mm-hmm.
it'll evolve. Sometimes the best is when a dish fails like 4 times before you get it right. Because when you get it right, you're like, oh, there it is.
Yeah. Do you have any items that you've made recently that you feel like really excited about? I mean, you know, those one item that an item that you were just working on, it just worked. Is there something that just you just got real happy about?
It actually happens a lot because I'll do things like I'll get pork belly, and the other day it's like I'm gonna pull back the skin, wrap it up, roll the skin around it, and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Whole roasted it for 8 hours, and it was the best pork roast I have ever had. Crispy crackling, tender meat. It just I got really lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really see it as it working. It's like I managed to put the ingredients together in the right way. I got lucky as hell when a dish comes out the first time.
Right.
It's rare, but it's pretty cool when you're like, yeah, it actually worked. And then mm-hmm. there's times where you're like, oof, that didn't work.
Yeah. You have any examples of things you've done that you were like, afterwards you're like, okay, that wasn't cool.
Today I actually tried to do a sausage stuffed onion, and it just failed miserably. The sausage came out like a hockey puck, and the onion wasn't cooked enough, and it did not work.
Yeah, I think that's a common thing with us chefs. Speaking of kind of now about culinary climate, you talked about the 100-mile thing, which you know, a lot of chefs are doing across the country. And as you look, is there anything that you think on your own is going to be trendy soon, or is there something that you've seen other chefs do that you think is pretty cool?
I mean, I think the big trend this year is food trucks. That seems to be they're just popping up everywhere in major cities, and Charlottesville mm-hmm. seems like the kind of city that would absorb that stuff really well.
Right.
I know there's a taco truck, and I know people have been doing that, but I think that's such a cool concept. You just go set up camp one night, cook your heart's desire. Next night you're cooking something else. But I don't know. I think one of the food trends this year is instead of putting too much on the plate,
right,
we're going to be paring stuff back. I think people are realizing that if you have great quality ingredients, you don't need to do much. You don't need to add much. You don't need to sauce it up the wazoo. You just grill a piece of pork, throw it on a plate, add some nice apples or peaches.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you have what would you think are your four favorite ingredients? The Harrison Keevil favorite four. Number four.
Number four, probably, I don't know, bacon, eggs, butter, and cheese.
Bacon, eggs, butter, and cheese. That sounds good to me. Yeah. Yeah, Harrison, you're a man after my own heart. What is your favorite meal that you've had in your entire life, do you think?
It probably has to be my mother's steak, mashed potatoes, and peas. That was the special dish that we got. It was always my birthday meal. It's just nothing better than a grilled piece of meat, some peas, and some my mom's mashed potatoes with some Beaumont and some curry.
Nice. Now, did they bring you up? Did they actually allow you every once in a while to taste wine, or was that part of your household?
Oh, no. My dad is a wine drinker, and he has a cellar, and he's quite knowledgeable about Italian wines and mm-hmm. some about French. But he would let me taste stuff. He would give me an understanding, a respect for what it was and what it comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So do you think that played, you know, kind of importantly towards you're being able to understand ingredients and taste?
I think my mother's cooking and her just allowing us, she had the rule that you had to try everything once.
Right.
If you didn't like it, you never had to try it again.
Anything that you hate, I mean, just really, you can't eat.
Eggplant.
Eggplant.
I hate eggplant.
You're just not wild about eggplant, and eggplant's not wild about you?
It's a textural thing. And I hate crappy mushrooms, like button mushrooms. And, uh-huh. Portobello mushrooms.
You've never had a good button mushroom in your life?
No.
Wow. Wow. You know, I found a champignon in my yard. I found some when I was in upstate New York, and I thought, I can't believe this. This is a wild champignon. And so I ate it, and you know, it was one of the best mushrooms I ever ate in my life. It tasted like anise and a porcini together. And it changed my life, but I haven't been able to find them wild ever since, but it was beautiful. But I understand what you mean about the crappy mushroom.
Well, then there's the whole, like, your palate changes over time, but then you also realize that maybe when you tried something, it was cooked really poorly. Like, I used to hate Brussels sprouts as a kid because all my mom would do, because this is the way my dad likes them, she would just boil the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Just go.
A brown Brussels sprout, yeah. Right?
But now I absolutely love Brussels sprouts. Throw them in the deep fat fryer with some goose fat, toss them in some bacon caper vinaigrette, and throw some cheese on them. Oh, my God, it's the best thing you'll ever eat.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you keep talking about my favorite things like goose fat. I don't know what's going to happen over here. Anyway, what do you have for, like, long-term goals now? You're at Brookville. People seem to really like it. They like you. You're part of what I think is a pretty cool restaurant town, Charlottesville. What are your long-term goals?
Because
you're still young, Harrison. Oh, you're a young guy.
I know. That's the advantage. Is one of the reasons I wanted to open a restaurant now is because I wanted to get a couple years under my belt, and then I'd be able and ready to start a family. And then I wouldn't be as married to the restaurant at that point, and I could start a family. But as Brookville goes, our goal is to one day buy a farm in the area and grow and completely sustain the restaurant from what we grow on the farm. And that's going to take a heck of a long time because I need to learn so much more before that happens. But right now, every day, our goal is to cook the best food that we can for every customer that comes up our doors and hope they go home happy.
Okay, look, if there's one thing that you would want people, your diners, people that listen to know about you, what would it be?
It's that you guys come first. I want you to come in my restaurant and feel like you're sitting at your own dining room table and you're just being taken care of. You don't have to worry about anything. I just want you to tell me the truth. If something's going wrong, I'll fix it. Just don't sit there quietly stewing because I overcooked your piece of meat. If I overcooked your piece of meat, please let me know. I'll recook it, and I'm not going to charge you for it because I want you to leave happy, and that's my goal.
Okay, well, you've heard it here at Chew the Fat with Craig Hartman. You're hearing from Harrison Keevil, and I think what we've heard tonight is a person who is in love with cooking and wants the people that come to eat at his restaurant to be happy and doesn't actually think that he's all that great. And I think that's pretty cool. So, Harrison, it's been really nice talking to you. And anything else you want to say before we sign off tonight?
I want the customers and restaurant goers of Charlottesville to demand more of us, the restaurants, because there's so much potential here, but we're just scratching the surface. You guys need to demand more. We'll give you more. Promise.
Cool. Well, thank you very much, Harrison. I've enjoyed listening to you. I think there's a lot more people out there that could be more like you, and I appreciate your mentality. And, folks, so you hear Harrison Keevil here at Brookville on Chew the Fat with Craig Hartman. Remember, you can find us on chewfat.net. That's chewfat.net. And as you can see, Harrison likes that because he likes bacon, he likes pork belly, he likes goose fat. And you can go to Brookville and find a lot of fat to chew on. So chewfat.net, the podcast where hopefully you'll really learn what makes a great chef, and hopefully things that will inspire you to do great things in the kitchen. Find us at chewfat.net. If you have any questions, please log into our blog. Ask us the questions. If you have any hard questions, if you think this is a great podcast, let us know. If you don't like it, let us know that too. Give us ideas and help to inspire us too. Again, it's Craig Hartman with Chew the Fat.
This song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of a restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. And I guess that, well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Atlas's Restaurant. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight, or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record, and it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago, 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the town dump. We got there, and there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie."